Region. This is the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM, broadcasting from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York. I'm Tatiana Morani.
And I'm Dave Pablo. Today we open our Labor Day episode with a special labor report from roaming correspondent Willie Terry.
Then we feature an interview with our correspondent Aaron Pednotti discussing Two Buttons Deep, a Capital Region news and entertainment website, with the state site's co-founder Jack Carpenter.
And we'll have an interview with representatives of RPI's chapter of Alpha Phi Omega.
And later on, we'll close out the show with the Sanctuary for Independent Media's own Dr. Brenda Miller. She will tell us all you can expect for the Sanctuary's upcoming fall season. But first, we give you today's headlines.
If any of the four Democratic primary candidates or Michael Sussman of the Green Party get elected, the ambitions of the New York State's Attorney's General's Office is likely to expand. Candidates have called for a lawsuit against the president, prosecutions of police officers for killing civilians, investigating Exxon over climate change, and multi-state coalitions challenging federal policies. All of the five candidates say they will aggressively challenge the Trump administration in court.
On July 4th, and as the region was in the midst of a heat wave, Wally Lester, a 26-year-old developmentally disabled man, was found dead in his bed in a group home in Schenectady while wearing multiple layers of shirts. The deplorable conditions in the home was spurred state investigations. The Justice Center for the Protection of People with Special Needs is tasked with investigating deaths, including everything from group homes to drug rehabilitation centers. Was formed in June of 2013 in response to a New York Times series that documented hundreds of people who had died under negligent circumstances. And with no criminal investigation or mechanisms for tracking the deaths or lapses in care, 5 years after the Justice Center's creation, criminal prosecution of staff whose behavior either directly or indirectly led to a resident's death is still rare.
Over the course of his 580 days in office, President Trump has gone to Trump properties on 196 days and Trump golf properties on 153 days, according to NBC's tracker. That adds up to 25% of his 590 days in office spent, at least in part, on a golf course.
The Human Rights Watch, or HRW, has called for an end to all weapons sales to Saudi Arabia following the bombing of a school bus last month that killed 51 people, including 40 children. The rights group called the attack an apparent war crime and said it places arms suppliers at risk of complicity in war crimes. HRW's statement, released on Sunday, came just hours after Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates admitted the bombing was, quote-unquote, unjustified. For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to WOOC's Hudson Mohawk Magazine on 105.3 FM.
To learn more about this program and how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. If you have comments, suggestions, or heartwarming praise, you can text us at 518-888-3004. For our first segment, WOOC roaming labor correspondent Willie Terry attended the Latin Festival on August 25th in Albany, Washington Park, where he interviewed members of the Latino community about their culture and the importance of celebrating it.
Marisol Hernandez.
And you work for this newspaper. What's the newspaper called?
Well, the newspaper is called CMY Latino. We're actually a media consortium that publishes the only Hispanic newspaper targeting to the Latino community that covers from Rochester to Albany, Watertown to Binghamton, all those cities in between.
Oh, okay. Now we're here at the Latin Fest in Washington Park in Albany, New York. Why is it important that we have festivals to celebrate the Latino culture?
Well, in my belief, having a festival that celebrates our culture not only helps us remember and reminisce about our culture and our roots, it helps our children learn where we come from so they don't forget. we also keep our music, our dance, and our food alive in a country that's not really the country where we were born, many of us. But it also helps people that are not Latino learn the good things about Latinos. That we come from all sources, all kinds of people. We have Latinos who are Latinos white, Latinos black, Latinos that look different, brown, and we all have different things. Yeah.
Right. Now you are from this area, or you're from some other city?
Well, our headquarters are in Syracuse. So I came from Syracuse, but myself, my roots are from Puerto Rico. I was born and raised in Puerto Rico. I've been in this country 34 years.
Yeah, and so I hear that the hurricane, brought a lot of problems to Puerto Rico. How is the situation there now?
Well, from what I understand, there are some areas that are still devastated. They still need a lot of resources and help. So it's a work in progress. If they're advancing in some areas, in others, not as strong even.
Sound like you enjoy your job.
Yes, I do. Very much so.
All right. Thank you for giving me this interview, okay? And I have my guest.
Melissa Whitaker.
Melissa Whitaker. And Melissa Whitaker is at the 1199 United Healthcare Worker booth. Melissa, are you in 1199?
I'm sorry?
What are you in 1199 now?
I'm a member organizer for the Capital Region, 1199 SCIU.
Oh, okay. And I see you have the booth here at the Latin Fest, and that's good. Unions are coming here. So why do you think it's important that unions be involved in events like this?
Well, I think that unions should be involved because it's a part of the community. And as a community, the community as a whole, solidarity is key. And regardless of whatever union you're from, whatever denomination, we all should be able to come together and unite, and be on a united front.
So you think it's a good way to show people that union is not a club, but union are part of the community?
Absolutely. The union is a very intricate and important part of the community.
So how have the people been taking you to learn about this?
Oh, we've had so many people come over. We've had hundreds of people. Right now, what we have is a sign-in sheet because we are in the process of organizing Albany Medical Center workers. And the community have been coming out and they are signing and saying that they stand with Albany Medical Center workers and they feel like they should, they deserve what's fair. So we've had a lot of people, all the stuff, our table is almost completely empty now. We had a whole box full of $11.99 stuff, and people have been coming and getting it. So we've gotten a lot of support today.
So is there a lot of Latino workers that are working in the medical center?
Yeah, Albany Medical Center has a diverse workforce, but we do have a lot of Latin workers as well.
All right. Thank you now.
Thank you so much. All right. You have a good day.
All right, you too. And I'm here at the Latin Fest, and I have now as my guest, what's the name of your restaurant?
My name is Brenda.
Your name is Brenda?
Yeah.
And what's the name of your restaurant?
Mama Spanish Restaurant.
And you are the owner?
Yes, I am.
And where is this restaurant located?
At 597 Second Ave, Troy, New York, 116.
116? And how long have you been there?
I've been there for 9 months.
Oh, 9 months?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And what kind of food you cook?
Spanish food.
And we're here at the Latin Fest. And what food is Spanish food?
Tell me. Rice and peas, pork, seafood salad. I have empanadas, beef, chicken, shrimp, steak and cheese, pizza. And then I have burritos.
And why should someone come and visit your restaurant? What is special about your restaurant?
The food.
You have a special dish?
Yes, my beef stew and chicken stew.
And what are the hours are you open?
I'm open 8 to 8.
8 to 8?
Yeah, Monday to Friday.
And so since this is the first time I heard you, hey, I'm going to give you an open invitation to come to our studio and let people know about the restaurant.
Okay, I'm fine with that. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. And I'm going to let you get back to business because I know it's a lot of crowd. Are you enjoying yourself here at the festival today?
Huh?
Are you enjoying yourself here today?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
And I'm your helper here.
I'm Bridgie. Hey, I'm the helper.
And where you from?
Troy, New York.
And where your family from?
Troy, New York. We're from Puerto Rico, but we live in Troy.
Right. Well, I'm in Troy. You're all transplant.
Yes.
Right. All right.
Labor.
And what's your name?
Mine's Blanca.
Blanca?
Ada.
And Ada? Ada and Blanca. I'm here at the Latin Fest at a beautiful booth with a lot of colorful clothes of Latin culture. Let me ask you this question right here. Where do you get all the material and the...
Okay, some of it is my designs and some of them are other people's designs. So what I do is sometimes I draw things and I tell them to put them on the shirts.
So you are a designer?
Yes, I do some designs. Some designs, not all.
Because normally, you know, a lot of times people go to the other country and get stuff and bring it back.
That's
but you,
true.
But
that's
you,
true.
But you.
I do my designs. And then I sell to other people. And then they purchase it and they sell at the festival too. So I'm a wholesaler at the same time. I'm a wholesaler at the same time.
And you're a business person.
Exactly.
Right.
Yes, I am.
And what is your sister right here?
This is not my sister. This is my niece.
Oh, your niece. Oh.
Yes.
Okay. And she helps me out.
Yeah, I help her.
You the help?
Yes.
Do you design?
No, I don't do no designs. Just my
aunt. But you learn to be a business person.
Well, yeah, I help her.
Business is good. Tell her.
Yeah, she does help me a lot. Yeah, I take her to all the festivals. Then I have here my husband, which she helps me out too. You see?
Okay.
So it's all of us three. Because this is a big setup.
Is it a family enterprise?
Yes, a family thing. Yeah, so sometimes I get my ideas. Sometimes the kids say, they give me opinion. They say, oh, Mom, this doesn't look that good. Change it a little bit.
And where are you from?
I'm from Brooklyn, New York.
I mean your original family.
Oh, Puerto Rico. Saltebatian.
Well, I had to ask you, though.
Yes, you're original from Puerto Rico. Yeah.
Because I lived in New York City.
Yeah. New York City is nice. I love it. But once in a blue moon, I go back to Puerto Rico to visit my mother. She has a house over there in Bayamón. She went through a lot of situation because what happened over there. Yes, it was terrible for her. Just recently, maybe you could say like 2 months ago, she got lights. She didn't have lights before.
I heard that on the news.
Yeah. But now she's okay.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And I want to say that your booth is very nice. I took pictures of it.
Thank you very much.
And keep it up, the good work.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You have a wonderful day.
Okay. And I have my guest.
Mickey Jimenez, Capital District Latinos Executive Director.
And Mickey, what is the Capital District Latino?
So the Capital District Latino is now a new location, which is a cultural center that we're calling our own here in Albany, New York, 160 Central Avenue. It's a cultural center that is to meet the needs in an educational, cultural, and also social services and health services for those people in the city, all people of color, but with the emphasis that it is a bilingual, it's a Spanish-grown organization called Acacia Network.
Oh, okay. And I see you're here at the Latin Fest. Why do you think it's important to, you know, bring this information out here? Or why do you think it's important that we have a Latin Fest?
Well, I think it's really important because, one, we're one of the co-sponsors because we want to draw more people to our table to understand that there is a lot of other services out in the community that they may not know. And sometimes you think that people will come to you, and it's better for us to come to them. And this is, what a better place than where there's food and music. And that's something that really attracts our Latino culture.
And I see you're enjoying yourself, right?
Oh, yeah, always. Even listen, you see me with an ankle brace, but I still move.
Strict. For the interview.
Thank you.
All right, now. Good luck.
That was WOOC, Roaming Corps correspondent Willie Terry with his special report from the Latin Festival in Albany's Washington Park.
Just a few minutes ago, I had a chance to sit down with members of RPI's chapter of Alpha Phi Omega, the National Co-Ed Community Service Fraternity, and talk about their mission and their personal experiences. So why don't you guys tell me what organization you're with and your names and all that kind of stuff?
So we are all brothers of Alpha Phi Omega, or APO, and it is the National Co-Ed Community Service Fraternity, and we are part of the Epsilon Zeta chapter from RPI. My name is Amy Lemos, and I'm the membership vice president for the chapter.
My name is Jackson Wong, and I'm the service vice president for the chapter.
My name is Aniga Iyengar, and I'm the fellowship vice president for the chapter.
And my name is Claire McManus, and I'm the historian for the chapter.
And what year are you individually at RPI?
I'm a junior. I'm studying chemical engineering.
I'm a junior studying computer science.
So I'm a senior graduating in December, and then I'm starting my master's degree in January.
In what?
In materials engineering, both of them.
Okay.
And I am a junior studying environmental engineering.
Okay. So what drew you to this organization? Why did you join?
So for me, I was looking for a better opportunity to be more involved outside of just my classes. And like our three pillars in APO are leadership, friendship, and service. And all three of those things are something that I personally enjoy and am interested in. So like the organization, it gives you a lot of chances to lead and plan events, gives you a lot of chances to help the community, and like also like the friendship part. We're like very close people, so it's a really good social aspect. So it kind of has the best of what a lot of people might be looking for, especially if you're service-oriented like us.
So when you say get involved, were there specific things? Because that can mean a lot to a lot of different people.
So what I was kind of looking for was, as like back in like high school, I was very involved in a lot of like extracurriculars, like band, like student government, all that stuff. And I just didn't know like quite where my fit was for my big extracurricular at college. So I was looking for somewhere where I could spend my time and spend my efforts that weren't just in my classwork. And this was like a good fit for me for sure.
Yeah, and so I joined because I'm someone who's pretty passionate about social justice and community service. I did a lot of it in high school. I joined actually as a junior, so my third year at RPI, because I was looking to do more of that. And I knew a bunch of people in Alpha Phi Omega who were really great people and who were also really service-minded. And so that's what drew me to the organization and led me to join.
I joined Alpha Phi Omega because I was looking for a group that was very diverse and also service-oriented. And I definitely found that with Alpha Phi Omega, there's a social aspect that I really enjoy, but I also enjoy the structured service, and it's very often, so I really like that.
So I joined my first semester freshman year because I was really looking for a community to kind of that I fit in with and really vibe with at school. It was hard transitioning from high school and living in Massachusetts to coming to a different state. And it was really just having a community, a group of friends that had a similar like set of morals that I did and a similar interest that really brought me in and also what kept me here.
It's hard to live in Massachusetts anyway.
That's a controversial topic.
Yeah.
So are there any particular things that have really stood out for you guys that you've gotten involved with that really have brought you some level of satisfaction?
Well, for me personally, it has been a lot of like some of the smaller events that I do. Sometimes when being an RPI student and being a student at almost any school can be really hard and taxing. But being able to put aside some of my time, not to just like watch Netflix or something, but to do something that's more meaningful for people around me, like making blankets for Linus Project or like volunteering at different places around the community and around, like we've even gone down to Pennsylvania one time to do community service down there and stuff like that, where I spent a weekend of my life instead of just sitting around or just kind of stressing myself out, I can do something that I feel is a lot more productive and worthwhile for myself. And I just think that the feelings I get from that and coming back from those experiences, feeling so satisfied and feeling as if I have like a physical representation in my mind for something mm-hmm. that I've done, not just like finishing a worksheet, not just going online and clicking a couple questions. And that's really, yeah.
One of the things that you mentioned, you said blankets?
Yeah.
Tell me what that was about.
So there's a project, I think, in the area. I don't know how far they go, but it's called the Linus Project. And something that we do usually about once a semester is we buy materials to make blankets. And I'm pretty sure they give these blankets to homeless children or children in need, especially during wintertime. They like to distribute these blankets around, like, the capital region, especially around Troy. I think that's where they're stationed. And we've spent, like, a lot of time as a brotherhood making making blankets for this project, and every single time we finish a blanket, like, four of us work on it, like, cutting and tying things together, and we get to, like, fold them up at the end, and someone gets to turn them in. It's always just, like, a really nice feeling.
It's a very personal statement.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's just, like, little things like that. We have so many projects that we do like that, that I think that each brother has, like, one of their own personal favorites. Like, my personal favorite is Linus Project, just because I've been involved in that for a couple of years.
Ones that I have found really fulfilling are when we work with organizations that benefit the Troy community, so like the Sanctuary and Troy Bike Rescue and Capital Roots. Those ones feel like it is meaningful to me because we're making, I think, a positive and impactful difference in the community, more than just, say, you know, donating to some charity that we don't know what they do with the funds or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's great. It feels very gratifying to me to be able to work with a bunch of people that I know and am friends with in the community that we are all in, even if it is only temporarily for school. It helps. I think I like that we do something to give back to the place that we're living.
So those three organizations that you named are very different groups in their nature, you know, TBR, the Sanctuary, and Capital Roots. Did you, in your work with them, get any sense of them as organizations in terms of how they're organized, how they're run, things you like about them, things you that made you have questions?
So, as you said, they're all different. So sort of my answer is different for the three of them. I think they all fill needs in the community that weren't met before in kind of innovative ways. Like, for example, the Troy Bike Rescue, I think it's pretty incredible that they, you know, recycle, you know, bikes that on their face don't work, but only because maybe one or two components don't work. They disassemble it and they can, you know, produce many, many working bicycles out of these, what many people would consider garbage. And the same way that Capital Roots provides, you know, fresh or gives the opportunity for fresh produce in what is a fresh food desert. And the Sanctuary is a little bit more like nebulous as to the, like, tangible benefit, but it brings people in the community together in an artistic way in a place that maybe is struggling to find like an artistic center that's not, like, really, like, capitalized. Mm-hmm. So they all sort of fulfill those different needs, and that's kind of why I am drawn to them, is because, I don't know, they speak to me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm kind of would be on the same vein as Jackson. I really like going down to the places in Troy that we go down into, because when you're up in campus and RPI, you, like, look down, like, you're in the library, you look down, you see Troy, you see this place, and you're so close to it every day, and, you know, it has its problems, and but, like, very rarely do you even go down into it. So I like that. That's one of the things I like about being in APO in general, is that it gives you the opportunity to get off campus and see the place around you, but you're not just going to, like, go shopping at the mall. You're going to go and help improve their surrounding area. Another thing, I like doing trail cleans as well. I thought of it as I was talking. So we work personally with Frere Park, and we do a lot of trail cleans there. And then sometimes we've been getting better at working with Grafton Lake State Park, where we're going. We made a trail at the end of the semester. We're going there on Sunday. So I like the outdoor stuff too. It, to add a different flavor from what just Jackson said, I like being outside and being able to go outside and actually help organize or improve the outdoor area that I'm in. It's nice. It's nice to do on a Saturday instead of, you know, sleeping in, and it's a nice way to de-stress before doing homework again, and, you know, you're also helping someone at the same time, so you can't really complain there.
I like part of the service aspect that I like is the interaction with both the brothers of Alpha Phi Omega and the Troy community. I also, like Jackson, I really like going to Troy Bike Rescue and Sanctuary, because I feel like we're making a good impact on the community that we live in, and many students don't get to do that because they don't often leave campus to interact with other people that they live around, and they don't get to see what could happen if they helped out as well.
That actually is a great segue to my next question, which is So APO has its own thing that's, they're obviously very focused on the communities that you interact with, but what about RPI in general? Are people generally introverted, and is that encouraged or discouraged in terms of their relationship with Troy or even the Capital Region in general?
I can actually kind of speak towards that. So I know that there's some people who go to RPI who are extroverted people, and there, of course, there's some people who are introverted, as you'd find in any large community. And I think the general feel that people get from the campus is a more introverted feel. Like, I know some people who, like, for example, like, there's some people that I knew who were juniors at RPI who had never once left the campus when they were there. They hadn't even gone on the bus to Walmart their entire time there. If they ever needed any food, they would just order it. And they would have things come to them. And I think it's, like, really something that was lost. My first semester at RPI, I never really went down to downtown Troy because, well, the school does a really good job of encouraging it, like, your first week here by showing you everything. They don't really, like, continue that encouragement afterwards. Like, we never really have any sort of, like, organized trip or, like, way to get downtown besides the shuttle to the dorm in downtown Troy and Blitman. And that, even that is just on the edge. Mm-hmm. And so I remember, like, I was actually through APO that I actually started going downtown more. A lot of older brothers who had been downtown, of course, doing service, just, like, hanging out, getting food, going to the bars, they brought me downtown and showed me some of my favorite food areas. Like, Troy has some really good food, and a lot of, like, students have started appreciating that, and a lot of them started going downtown more for some food, and, like, a lot of the cultural events and stuff, I think we just don't hear about, really. I know the Tulip Festival happens right after school ends, so sometimes people who stay behind for senior week end up going to that. But overall, I think that there is kind of a disconnect between the RPI campus as a whole and getting to downtown Troy. I feel like a lot of people just kind of stay up on the hill and never mm-hmm. walk down.
Now, I would think it would... So I went to Georgetown down in D.C., and there was certainly that kind of insular atmosphere. But then for upperclassmen, you, after a while, you get bored with where you are and you start to wander, or you live off campus or that type of thing. So have you found that your, you know, relationship with this with the area has evolved?
I think mine has, definitely. But it's also to build off what Anika said, I think the downtown area is, you know, people don't go to it too much, even though it is pretty inviting. There's a lot of, like, things to do in that area. But I think there is definitely a stigma at RPI against, you know, even, the rest of Troy. Because Troy is, like, at least geographically, a huge city. There's, you know, you go further north, you go further south, you go further up the hill. I think that still is considered Troy. And, like, you never even hear about anybody going anywhere near any of those places from RPI. So, like, I think community engagement, like, between RPI students and the Troy community is, like, limited to the downtown and then hardly anything past that, because there's a stigma of, like, at RPI of it being, you know, dangerous or not the right place to go or something like that. Mm-hmm. In terms of the next question of how has my relationship evolved, I did move off campus as soon as I could after my sophomore year, but... my house, the house that I live in is really close to the campus anyway. And I think that's where most people live. The furthest people that I know who don't live in fraternity is kind of further away. Their own apartments lived on, like, not even that close to the river. It was down the hill, but not too far even. And I feel like while, like, my relationship with Troy has probably evolved somewhat since my freshman year, it still isn't really in my, like, realm of where I would go at any given time to move throughout the rest of Troy past, like, the downtown area.
Okay. So why don't we close up with this coming year? Do you guys have particular projects that you're looking forward to, or is it just, you know, what comes in on a day-to-day or week-to-week kind of basis?
So in terms of our service program, that's so what I'm in charge of organizing as the service vice president. And we have one specific event that's coming up on September 29th. We are taking a bunch of different groups from RPI to the Northern Rivers Parsons Children and Family Center. I believe I got that name right, to do some painting for them. We're taking about 100 people to go and for the whole day go and work on that. So that's, like, what we have, like, specifically, like, a big thing coming up. We also, we may be doing something for our national fraternity has a national service week in November, which is the theme this year is suicide prevention in the community. And we will probably be doing something for that week. And then past that, we don't have too many more specific plans aside from the rest of our Rush calendar.
Yeah, so specifically our Rush is service-oriented because we are a fraternity. We do have, like, a pledging process, which is nothing what you would think of with a normal pledging process. Yeah. Basically, it's teaching you how to, like, be a brother, how to plan events. Your pledge class plans an event. You plan an event. You meet everyone. It's just to get you integrated. But in order to do that, with this as a Rush event today, like, half the people here are just people who just decided to come out and see if they liked us. Huh. So we have... a scouting event because APO was founded by the Boy Scouts, people who were Boy Scouts, but so we have a scouting event. We're going to Grafton Lake, like I said. We're going to do a trail clean. We're going to Capitol Roots. So we have just a few in the next week. So we're loaded right ahead with a bunch of service to start our semester. So those are our guaranteed events, and then once our pledges come in, they're all, you know, hopefully we get a lot and we have new members. They'll all plan events throughout the semester. Brothers will continue to. So really we'll just have periodic service at least a couple of times a week throughout the semester. But those are more just things that either are special events or just places we like to go to.
Great. Anybody else want to add anything?
I think we're all set.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming in and enjoying the air conditioning. And,
thank you. Yeah, thank you. We do love the sanctuary. We love coming back here and
doing
it. Yeah,
we do.
Well, I know that we appreciate you guys coming in and, mm-hmm. Come to all the different events because there's a lot of different stuff happening here. I can tell you that a lot of the events are video recorded. So if you're interested in learning how to use cameras or do editing or if you want to get involved with the radio station, all that stuff is available to you. All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great.
Thank you so much.
That was my co-host, Dave Pablo, with Amy Lemos, Jackson Wong, Annika Einhart, and Claire McManus of the Epsilon Zeta chapter of Alpha Phi Omega at RPI.
For those just tuning in, I'm Dave Pablo.
And I'm Tatiana Morani. You're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM, Troy.
To learn more about the Hudson Mohawk Magazine program, to listen online, and to learn how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, check us out online at mediasanctuary.org. If you have comments, suggestions, or any sort of admiration, you can text us at 518-888-3004. Also, be sure to tune in 7 to 10 weeknights for Jazz Sanctuary, a celebration of all that's creative, supporting jazz in the Hudson Mohawk region.
Two Buttons Deep is a news and entertainment website produced by for the Capital Region by a team of local media makers. In our next segment, WOOC correspondent Aaron Pettinati talks with the site's co-founder, Jack Carpenter, about its purpose and mission.
I'm Aaron Pettinati. Today I'm interviewing Jack Carpenter, who's the co-founder and video director of Two Buttons Deep, a news and entertainment website servicing the Capital Region. Jack began his career in media production during high school, producing YouTube videos that eventually garnered millions of views. While studying at Champlain College in Burlington, Vermont, he hosted a talk show that aired weekly across the state for which he won an Emmy at the College Television Awards of 2014. He also interned on the Conan O'Brien Show and once appeared on the Jimmy Fallon Show as a guest. He's since returned to the Capital Region to produce Two Buttons Deep. Jack, thanks for coming on the show today. It's good to have you as a guest on the Hudson Mohawk Evening Magazine.
Thank you very much. I'm honored to be on the program.
So the website has a video unpacking the meaning of its title, Two Buttons Deep. Can you explain what that title means to our listening audience?
So let's back it up a little bit and talk about what it means to be zero buttons deep. So this is a phenomenon that grew from my time in Champlain. It's kind of started as an inside joke with me and my friends and has grown into this. So when you're zero buttons deep, it's the least fun time of your day. You're going into work at 9 a.m. You got your tie on tight, obviously, hence being zero buttons deep. And the good news is your day, hopefully, will only get better from there. When you're one button deep, you're a little bit looser. You know, maybe you're on lunch break or doing something you like with coworkers you like. And then two buttons deep, the concept of being two buttons deep is whatever time of the day you look forward to the most. Whether it's happy hour with your friends, dinner with your family, wherever you're in the zone having good conversations with people you care about, that's what we consider being two buttons deep. So with our website, Two Buttons Deep, all of the content that we create and all of the stuff we talk about is stuff we think people will want to talk about when they're two buttons deep with their friends. So that's what the concept is. And then obviously you can go beyond, you know, two buttons deep to three buttons deep, four buttons deep. But we say that stuff is best left off of the internet.
So now can you give us some basic information on Two Buttons Deep? The website describes it as a Capital Region-based news and entertainment website. So what sort of stories does it cover? And does it draw a line between news and entertainment or treat them more as overlapping categories? From what you said before, it sounds kind of like overlapping categories, but let's get your response on that.
Yeah, we say we're a news and entertainment site, but we're definitely not a news site, nor do we want to be. We don't want people to come to Two Buttons Deep to read breaking news or, you know, highly investigative news. All we talk about is stuff we think people will want to talk about. So we find stories from other valuable sources around the capital region, local television, local papers, and then, of course, national news as well. So we have a focus on upstate New York, and all of our personalities are born and raised here. We're all people who are very much enjoying our lives in upstate, and we're kind of highlighting what makes it special to us. And we do it in a way that we try and make it entertaining. You know, we give our take on what's happening. And like I said, we're not trying to break news, and we're not just trying to say the five W's. It's kind of, here's the story, and here's how we feel about it. And, you know, that causes issues, that causes praise, but we do it in a quick format way that we think people will be entertained by and kind of escape the cubicle lifestyle most people are living in the capital region and see the brighter side of what's happening. And the other thing about what we cover is we never cover, well, you know, I would consider dark stuff. We don't talk about murders, we don't talk about war, and we definitely don't touch on politics whenever we can, because, you know, we just want the fun stuff and the cool stuff and the interesting stuff that's happening in life all on one page for you to get your news from.
So along with being the co-founder of the website, you're also its video producer. So what sort of work does that involve for you, and what kind of videos do you make?
So Two Buttons Deep is a range of, I would say, new media. We do some blogs. We do mostly video coverage, which I would say could be on par with what local news channels do when they go to an event and cover it. We're much more interactive when we go to places. You know, the local news stations will go and get the five W's, maybe one interview, and put together a quick package. We go to, we'll send one of our personalities to an event and create a very immersive experience. We try and let the viewer experience what it's like to be there. You know, we talk to people, we drink with people, we have a good time, and then we put that together. And it's, you know, we don't really have anybody censoring what we do, which again, could be a good or a bad thing. So apart from video coverage, we also do a lot of original series. And that's really where I see the future of Two Buttons Deep going, is we want to develop almost into a network, such as NBC or even Netflix and Hulu, where they have a whole library of shows you can choose from. And one of our mainstay shows is something called Upstate Old School. We collaborate with Vic Christopher, a local entrepreneur and restaurateur, and we sent him all around upstate New York discovering the coolest old school establishments that have been open for over 25 years or more in upstate. And it's kind of like the Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives type feel, where he gets to know the owners and experiences the whole place in Two Buttons Deep fashion. So we're slowly but surely creating a long list of original series like that. And in terms of video production, that's what I do. I think of the ideas, I produce it, I edit it, and then I repeat it the next day.
There was a period in your own career shortly after college in which you traveled the country for 6 months, producing content for a website that focused on college life. Can you compare that kind of on-the-road media production to putting out the more locally-based, regionally-oriented media that Two Buttons Deep produces?
Yeah, that was a very interesting time in my life. My first job, I traveled on a double-decker bus across the country with a company called College Weekly, and I was hired based on the show I did in my collegiate career. It was like a late night type show. So I was hired by this company to do a weekly talk show. And the concept of this company was we would go to a new college every single week. And we would, you know, we were on this giant double decker bus that our sponsor provided. It was very cool. And we went to big schools like Florida State, Georgia, Texas, and it was all intertwined with their biggest football career. So the atmosphere was electric when we were down there. And we threw parties, we did big philanthropy events with the local frats and sororities, and then it was my job to do a weekly talk show. What I really learned was how to make good on-the-fly content. Because when we rolled into a town, we had no resources. You know, ideally, we probably could have worked with, like, the school's television station or something to create something, but it was just us and our cameras rolling into a city we've never been to, and going out, doing man-on-the-street stuff, shooting our show on the bus, doing all sorts of coverage. And I really haven't perfected it, but really honed my craft of being able to go out into a place people may not even know were there, like in an event or something, and being able to capture it in a way the viewer feels like they were there themselves. And that's what we try and do with Two Buns Deep, and that's what I brought back here. So it's a lot easier here now that we have a home base at the Troy Innovation Garage, and we know we're comfortable with this area. So we still show up, and people may not know we're coming. Sometimes they do. A lot more, you know, recently people have been reaching out, and now we have a lot of sponsors that set us up with certain events. But, our, you know, we kind of show up, and we say we ask for forgiveness, not permission. And that's just how we roll.
Okay, so my last question is, based on your own experience putting out web-based regional coverage, what sort of advantages do you think that media produced for the internet has over traditional media like TV and newspapers?
My passion for everything that I do and that I've done stems from the fact that I love late-night television. Like we said before, Jimmy Fallon, I interned with Conan. I watch late night every single night. I love the format, I love the history, and I want to be part of its future. But what I realized over the past few years is that the future of late night television is the internet. There are so many, by millions, more people watching the clips and the episodes of what Jimmy Fallon did on The Tonight Show online the next day than they are staying up at night to watch it live on NBC. Now, I'm not saying those mediums are going to die. I'm sure Jimmy Fallon will be on TV until he retires, but there's a lot more opportunity on the internet, especially for people who don't have access to broadcasting or distribution. And that's one of the main benefits of producing solely for the internet, is that you cut the overhead of broadcast and distribution, which is a lot of money. And that's why, as I'm sure you heard, companies like The Alt, they had just gone under because it's not feasible. And now our main inspirations are companies like BuzzFeed and Barstool Sports, who are bigger than most Hollywood studios now, worth hundreds of millions of dollars, and all they do is create content for the internet. It's so easy. You don't need that much space. If you have the mindset, you have the core assets of production materials, and you have the talent, there's nothing you can and can't do on the internet. And there's a lot less censorship, which people like. They like more openness. They like raw material. And why we started this here in upstate New York is nobody is really focusing solely on the internet right now. The local radio stations and the local news stations, who I guess you could consider our competitors, they're getting good at it. You know, they're starting to do live streams to document behind the scenes. They push everything to the internet. And I would say that's saving them. You know, people aren't watching TV the way they used to. People definitely aren't reading newspapers like they used to. Less than 20% of people get their news solely from a newspaper. And, you know, I'm not trying to distinguish the importance of that. I know most real journalism is done by newspaper journalists, and it'll be scary once the actual big entities like the Times Union and the Daily Gazette, you know, once they're, you know, they're obviously shrinking, but once they're gone, that'll be detrimental. That'll be a huge shift. But I'm not a journalist, and I don't consider myself a journalist. I'm an entertainer, and what we do has ample opportunity on the internet, and I see a lot of a very bright future here in upstate New York, because not a lot of companies they're doing it, but I don't think they're doing it as well as they could be.
Well, thanks very much for this interview, Jack, and very best of luck to you moving forward.
Thank you very much. We'll see you around.
That was Aaron Pednotti talking to Jack Carpenter about Two Buttons Deep. And now we're into our fourth segment. Every fall, Sanctuary for Independent Media kicks off a whole new list of events and workshops and other happenings. And so I'm sitting here with Steve Pierce and Brandon Miller to talk about what's ahead.
Welcome. So I know we've... Welcome, guys. I feel we're welcoming to your... Okay. So I know you got we've got some workshops in the works. Can you guys just kind of talk about what workshops we have coming up?
Well, we've got an exciting full schedule of stuff, workshops, events, gallery show, and we've actually been working all day finalizing our brochure. We don't like to work unless it's really hot and humid, and the environmental conditions weren't really good enough here at the sanctuary until today, but we've been spending all day working on it. Brandon, tell us what's coming up in the realm of workshops. You're our arts and education coordinator. I know you've been working hard on this. What's up?
Well, we're really excited about our Fall 18 series of workshops. There's going to be a lot of focus on Nature Lab, which stands for North Troy Art, Technology, and Urban Research in Ecology. And we're using our entire environmental campus. We have several lots and buildings on one block here in North Troy. And these lots have been turned into gardens with the Collard City Growers. So there's going to be workshops that have to have a focus on biology and art and on gardening. And so some of them, just to get a little bit excited about what's coming up, is we have three Wednesday afternoon workshops that are 3 till 7 p.m. That are bio art, and they are connected to our Bio Art Futures project that was funded by the National Endowment for the Arts. One is called Hormone Hacking, Harvesting Endocrine Disruptors with bioartist Byron Rich. And with some simple DIY tools and protocols, you can learn to extract and identify estrogenic compounds in liquids ranging from local waterways to common foods. So we will be checking out the water right here in our sink as well as the Hudson River. Another one of these bioart workshops.
That should be very comforting.
Yes, because I believe that we will find out that there is a lot of estrogenic compounds in our water. The next one gets even more exciting with feral fermentation with bioartists Layla Nadir and Carrie Adams, which is going to be a class in slow cooking, looking at the ancient practices of fermentation, where we will end up creating edible bioart that will take 2 weeks for microbes to cook for you.
That does not sound yummy.
And then the third bioart workshop, which is coming in November, these are all on Wednesdays. You can check at mediasanctuary.org to see the dates, is Who Do You Think You Are? DNA Ancestry and Biosurveillance with bioartist Heather Dewey-Hagborg. In between that, we will be having workshops in our gardens that really focus on permaculture from the grassroots up here in North Troy. We're having a seedy social with Collard City Growers and the next Epic Seed Library on Sunday, October 28th. And the Great Leaf Forward with Collard City Growers on Sunday, November 4th, where you learn what you need to do to put your garden into winter hibernation. And then finally, fruit and berry propagation on December 15th, which is also our North Troy Holiday Justice and Peace celebration, which moves us into events.
Yeah, but first, before we get into events, yes, I want to talk about the art exhibit that's coming in soon. Okay. I know you guys talked about getting ready for it earlier today. Who's the artist that will be featured in this art exhibit?
Well, we're really excited for this season because we're actually featuring an artist who turned 20 at the sanctuary this summer. She was an intern with us. Her name is Catherine Rafferty. She's a student at RIT. And she documented our summer program where we worked with youth from who were part of the Rensselaer County Summer Youth Employment Workforce Development Program. And she documented what we're calling our exhibition Roots for Resilience. And our youth this summer in our program focused on art, they focused on science, and they focused on media to look at environmental justice in our communities and also to tell stories of resilience. So the photos will be showcasing the youth and the community from the sanctuary moving more deeply into planting roots for resilience.
Sounds beautiful. I can't wait to see it.
You know, you didn't mention the Be the Media workshops, which we're also having, but I'll just quickly go over that because that's so connected to our efforts here at WOOC. But we're going to have a series of workshops. One of them is going to be on voice tracking. It's a guy who has been working for years at the New School for Radio and Television, and they renamed themselves and took Radio and Television out of their name, and I think they took him out of their lineup, which is crazy because you have the need for all the same skills regardless of the media form that you're talking about. But Tom Hahn is his name, and he's going to be doing a workshop on the art of voice. Elizabeth Press, one of our Sanctuary volunteers and board members and emerita of Democracy Now, is going to do a session on audio editing. We're going to have an interviewing workshop, and we're also going to have kind of a new producer orientation. That was Dave's idea, a place where people who are interested in getting involved with this radio station, with this news program, can find out how to do it and what kind of skills are necessary. So those are all coming up in the fall.
Sounds yes, great. Certainly stay tuned to the website to find out when those are. So events. What's going to be happening here at the Sanctuary?
So we have, we always try to do a couple of music events and a couple of film screenings and a couple of speakers, and this season is no exception. We're going to launch on Wednesday, September 26th, with a great band that's been traveling all over the world. It's called Del Grays, and it's a kind of a roots trio. Sounds very bluesy, but they're singing in French and playing music that they say is derived from their own roots, which is the French Caribbean island of Guadeloupe, but filtered through the New Orleans musical pantheon of styles. It's a super political band. The name Del Grays comes from a guy who was killed in 1802 fighting against the reimposition of slavery by Bonaparte. And so their whole sound and their whole style and their whole approach to culture is based on this fight against slavery and white supremacy and so forth. But it's a blues band, and it's a party, and it's a good thing because it's also going to be a celebration of the first year anniversary of this show, the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, and all the great stuff that's going on at the Sanctuary. So, and it's also going to be the gallery opening, so it'll be a lot of fun for that.
Oh, it does sound fun. It sounds very fun. Where can people find tickets for that event?
If they go to mediasanctuary.org, you can get tickets in advance. They're on sale now. We also have, there's a bunch of stuff, and I'm sure we're going to run out of time before we get to all of them, but I'll say very quickly that same week, our annual Story Harvest Festival on Saturday, September 29th, which is part of the Hudson Valley Ramble. What's it called? Is that what it is? Hudson Valley Ramble? It's part of the whole Hudson. I don't think it's part of the Color City Ramble. That's a good point. But there's a whole celebration up and down the Hudson Valley that week, and that Saturday is the finale of it. And we're going to have a great group from down around Woodstock called Root Brew, and a couple other bands with free music and food and arts and all that outside at Freedom Square. So that's the first week of our season. And then I'll mention one other one event, a group that we just booked called La Dama. It's four women from Latin American countries who are celebrating the culture of the Americas, different countries and cultures. It's a pretty amazing group. They were just, I think a year or so ago, they were at Mass Boca. They've also been traveling all around the world, so we're looking forward to that.
And what do we have, who do we have for speakers coming up?
Well, we actually are bringing back Chris Hedges, and he is coming on November 3rd, and he's the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and best-selling author who is going to show us an America that should shame us, a land of rampant and deadly drug addiction, of escape into gambling, sadism and pornography, of xenophobic scapegoating, and of plundering by the rich and powerful. And that's the good news.
Yeah, he's got a new book, right? How to Be Happy Without Being Happy.
Actually, we were tricked into doing this. He's calling it, it's called America the Farewell Tour. And I've always been a big fan of the folk rock trio America. And I thought, yes, what a coup. And it turns out to be Chris Hedges in his new book. But that's okay. Funny. I'm sure it's going to be just as enjoyable.
Oh, we have another book, too, actually.
On a horse with no name.
Leah Penniman, who is local, right, from our region, has written a book called Farming While Black. And she is a Black Creole educator, farmer, author, food justice activist from Soulfire Farm in Grafton, New York. And she's exploring a global network of farmers working to increase farmland stewardship by people of color, restore Afro-Indigenous farming practices, and end food apartheid. And we are really honored to celebrate her new book with a book opening and party at the Sanctuary on November 1st.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one should be really great, actually, because she's a very powerful speaker. And for anybody who's ever gone out for Community Day at Soulfire, it's a very interesting place, and you can learn a lot.
Yeah, she's absolutely great. She's been an inspiration to us and a longtime supporter. You know, I forgot to mention on our music programming, the folks at the Egg are doing a special benefit for WOOC. They're super supportive of us for our giving exposure to African pop and reggae music. And they have coming up in October on the 25th, a special performance by Vusi Malesela, legendary South African singer-songwriter. He was here 2 years ago at the Egg. He's coming back with his band, and it's a great show. It's a celebration of nearly 25 years of freedom from apartheid in South Africa, which Vusi Malesela was a huge part of in that struggle, and also a celebration of the 100th birthday of Nelson Mandela. And he's pulling out a whole songbook of stellar South African artists, including Miriam Makeba, Hugh Masekela, Dorothy Masuka, Brenda Fassie, folks who are legendary in South Africa and whose music has gotten out as well.
And if we have time, let's tell about the jazz that we're bringing, and then we can move on to filmmaking.
I see that Jonah has the hook, but
2 minutes.
Yeah. So we have two great jazz shows from local and regional artists. Ornette Kid is one. Trumpeter Chris Payson is going to be playing the music of Ornette Coleman with his group. And we have a return visit by Ross Moshe, a young man who was here 10 years ago as part of our Free Jazz from the Sanctuary series. He's coming back. He's got a great concept where he's performing music that he's written based on his father's letters from Vietnam, which he just discovered. And so he's excited about doing that, and we're excited about having him come back.
Great. And we have two films, filmmakers coming, two films. One is Crime and Punishment, which has won awards all over, and it's a film that chronicles the struggles of a group of Black and Latino whistleblower cops and the young minorities they are pressured to arrest and summon in New York City. And it is supposed to be an extraordinary film, and we have the filmmaker Stephen Mang coming to present that. And then we also, and that's on November 14th, and then we also have a film that's been recommended by a local group, Urban Grief, called Resilience, the Biology of Stress and the Science of Hope, that examines the emerging science around toxic stress and how it can negatively affect our brains and bodies of children if left untreated. So we really have a lot between art, music, science, writing. We're really, really excited to get started with our fall season, and we welcome everyone who's listening to join us.
Yeah, but if you want to find out more, the details, the, you know, everything, tickets in advance, times and dates, just go to mediasanctuary.org, which is also where you can hear this show streamed live if you're outside the broadcast area, and also hear it streaming at your leisure, audio on demand at mediasanctuary.org. So I hope you can check that out. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you guys for giving us the 411 and updating us on all the cool things here happening at the Sanctuary. But that concludes our show. We hope that you've enjoyed this episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm Tatiana Morani.
And I'm Dave Pablo. Remember to tune back in tomorrow and every weekday at 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. to get your daily dose of local news. You can also get that dose through our Hudson Mohawk Magazine podcast and Facebook page. If you have comments, suggestions, or the sudden urge to express your gratitude, you can text us at 518-888-3004. Also, be sure to tune in 7 to 10 weeknights for Jazz Sanctuary, dedicated to supporting jazz in the Hudson Mohawk region.
As a reminder, WOOC 105.3 FM is produced by local volunteers. That means you, if you're interested in joining our radio effort, shoot us an email at info@mediasanctuary.org. You're also more than welcome to join us at one of our planning meetings held on Monday nights at 7:07 p.m. Thank you for tuning in, guys. Until next time, folks.